Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, July 12th, 2013. Ed Snowden's world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller all the time.
There is just one moon and one golden sun, and a smile means friendship to everyone. Though the mountains divide and the oceans are wide, it's a small world.
After reviewing his limited options and the time it would take and the travel restrictions he endures because the U.S. canceled his passport, Ed Snowden has announced that he is willing to stay in Russia for a while. He would like to be granted temporary asylum there. And he is willing to abide by the restriction articulated by Vladimir Putin, the maximum leader of Russia, that he has to cease his work aimed at inflicting damage on American partners. That was Putin's phrase. And Snowden said he accepts the conditions. But, wiggle room here, he said he doesn't think his prior disclosures have hurt American interests, and it remained unclear whether he plans to continue publishing classified documents. Now, I don't know how fine a point to put on this, but Snowden could say he's already done his work. He unloaded a trove of information to The Guardian, to The Washington Post, to Der Spiegel, maybe other outlets, we don't know. And so he can say, look, I'm not doing anything more. I already started that in motion and I can't stop it. Meanwhile, the White House and the administration continue a worldwide full-court gringo press. The lead story in Friday's New York Times, which is scooped by the announcement from Moscow, is that the U.S. is pressing Latin American leaders to reject Snowden with overt and gringo-like threats. There is not a country in the hemisphere whose government does not understand our position at this point. If someone thinks things would go away, it won't be the case. So we're really flexing our muscles. And we have Venezuela, Bolivia, and Nicaragua who have offered asylum to Snowden. Of those countries, it's hard to imagine that Bolivia and Venezuela will knuckle under. Venezuela has a history, of course, under the Chavez regime, of American interference and attempts to destabilize and actually depose Chavez. And Evo Morales, the leader of Bolivia, is still smarting from our denial of his transit through European airspace. A Bigfoot move by the U.S., which was really, really dumb. And so Daniel Ortega, who I don't really know anymore, he was a revolutionary 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and now he's kind of a corporatized leader there in Nicaragua. Hard to say what risk there would be to his country if they granted asylum to Ed Snowden. And so the U.S. is putting pressure. Obama scheduled to talk by phone with Putin on Friday evening American time. There is an Obama visit scheduled for Moscow and St. Petersburg in about 2 months. And the U.S. wants to put pressure on Russia not to grant asylum to Snowden without screwing up too much else. So it'll be interesting to see how Obama plays this. The other item that's noteworthy is that despite the apparent willingness of Russia to grant asylum, they're saying it could take 2 to 3 weeks to process his request. Meanwhile, he is still, we have confirmation, that he's there in the transit zone, the no man's land at the airport in Moscow. In our in-depth interview released today for subscribers at peterbcollins.com and through all channels, including TuneIn and, oh gosh, iTunes and Stitcher, all the places where you can hear my podcast, we talked with Kevin Gostola, the reporter who has been live blogging the proceedings at the Bradley Manning court-martial trial in Fort Meade, Maryland. And it was an interesting week. The defense launched its presentation, and it rested after less than 3 days, calling only 9 witnesses, not the 40-plus we had been told to expect. And in my conversation with Kevin Gostola, here's an excerpt from the discussion about the opening presentation from the defense, which was to play the collateral murder video from Iraq.
There's a book called The Good Soldiers that was written by David Finkel. And the reason why Coombs really wanted to show the video was so that it could become more than clear to the judge that this video was not, and the word that you use in the government is closely held. Mm-hmm. So if something's closely held, it means that there are actions being taken to protect that information from being disclosed to the public. And if any of the information that Manning released was not closely held, it makes it very difficult to convict him of that release of the information or to seriously sentence him to a long period of time in prison, mm-hmm. because that's just the reality here. And so going forward, he presented this video because he argued that it was not closely held. If you look at that book, The Good Soldiers, then you can see that there's a verbatim transcript of the collateral murder video, and he had been given access to it when people at Reuters were denied a copy of the video in their FOIA request.
And the critical detail here is that Manning reportedly read The Good Soldiers before he acted, right?
Yeah, he was aware that this existed. So that's also why the prosecutors can't raise any objection. Mm-hmm. According to Manning's statement, he knew that this was out there, and he was bothered by the way that Finkel characterized the attack as something that was all right. Nothing going on here, nothing to see. He accepted the whole U.S. government line that this is following the rules of engagement.
You can hear the full interview with Kevin Gostola, the recap of the Manning trial. That's at peterbcollins.com today for subscribers. And if you're not a subscriber already, can I invite you to join us? I need your support. That's the only way I am currently getting revenue to this podcast, and it doesn't make me rich, I can frankly tell you that. But I have phone bills to pay and server bills to pay and webmaster bills to pay. And if you can help, I would be very grateful. Just go to the homepage at peterbcollins.com and follow the links under my picture. It only takes a couple of minutes, and you can set up a monthly deal with PayPal at $5 a month, or sign up for our $50 annual subscription. That's the best deal, and I still have copies of Sibel Edmonds' Classified Woman book. That's our bonus book for new annual subscribers. Eric Holder, the embattled attorney general, is issuing new guidelines today that would, according to the Justice Department, significantly narrow the circumstances under which journalists' records could be obtained. And this is sheer window dressing, because with each new guideline that they announce that would protect a reporter, there is an exception that you could fly a 777 or the jetliner of your choice through. And they claim that, well, this is the most that the Justice Department can do with rules. We need a new shield law from Congress. Only the shield laws that have been proposed only cover corporate media reporters. There are huge exceptions. It doesn't cover bloggers or people who are new journalists in new media. And so even if it does pass, it's not full protection, and it would create a two-tier system. And the very people who are knuckling to the government today, they're the ones who would have the greatest protection. And the courageous reporters, the independent journalists who are breaking stories and risking their lives, risking their freedom, risking a crackdown, being the next whistleblower to be targeted by Obama, they wouldn't have that kind of protection under the proposed shield law. There's already a Privacy Protection Act, but it's got loopholes that allow the prosecution of a reporter if they suspect he or she has committed a crime in the process of gathering information. No American journalist has ever been prosecuted for gathering and publishing classified information. And Yet the Obama administration and the Holder Justice Department are not willing to take that precedent and make it their standard. And so I take no confidence in these announced moves. Senator Rod Wyden, speaking in a hopeful tone, says that he thinks the Obama administration is thinking about scaling back its bulk collection of Americans' phone records. He thinks, and they think, well, let's see some action on this. Wyden told the New York Times, I have a feeling that the administration is getting concerned about the bulk phone records collection and that they're thinking about whether to move administratively to stop it. Well, the Verizon warrant that was leaked by Ed Snowden expires on July 19th. And the administration could publicly acknowledge that it is not seeking renewal of that mass data collection order. But because it's so wrapped up in all these levels of secrecy, and the FISA court is secret, and its rulings are secret, the evidence before it is secret, we may never know. But this is an opportunity for the administration to make a clean break from the unconstitutional actions of its past and the Bush administration. And I don't think it's going to happen. I appreciate the optimism of Senator Wyden. But I'll only be satisfied when we roll back this entire albatross of the surveillance state in this country. Friends of mine and activists are gathering tomorrow, the 13th of July, in one of the richest areas of the San Francisco Bay Area. It's called Belvedere. It's actually an island connected by a causeway. And it is the richest zip code in Marin County. Nancy Pelosi will be there for a fundraiser, and an array of people are turning out to signal to her their displeasure. As she said at Netroots Nation that drew boos a few weeks back, she supports the prosecution of Ed Snowden. And, in turn, she appears to support the massive surveillance of Americans. And as you may know, I have known Nancy Pelosi for many years, and I worked for her on a campaign once. And I saw her last year, well, I guess it's a year and a half ago now, and it was an awkward situation. It was a memorial for a well-known reporter here who had passed away. And Nancy and I were chatting a little bit about the Rollin Post, the man who had died. And as she started to move on and talk to other people, I just said, Nancy, I know you've got a lot of things on your agenda, but I'd like my Fourth Amendment back. And she smiled and appeared a little uncomfortable and didn't say much and just moved on to the next person to talk to. Well, I support the individuals who are going to confront Nancy Pelosi at this fundraiser and express their deep disagreement with her on these issues. And I hope she'll listen. Nancy does listen. I know that from my contact with her over the years. And I hope that she will take our message to heart. Yesterday, in our in-depth interview with Jason Leopold about the latest on the hunger strikers at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the hunger strikers here in the California prison system, that hunger strike does continue. The official report is that fewer people are participating, but it is noteworthy. And during that interview, Jason broke the news of an important court ruling from Judge Royce Lamberth on the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia. And a petition had been brought to him by an inmate at Guantanamo who objects to the recent intrusive body searches, including manual contact with genitalia, and that these strip searches are being imposed mostly when an inmate is going to have a meeting or a conference call with his attorney. And so the judge, despite being a Republican appointee back in the Reagan era, rejected the explanations from the military as yet another exaggerated response by the military that was inhibiting petitioners' access to counsel. And last September, Judge Lamberth issued a similarly scathing opinion, rejecting new restrictions on lawyers' access to clients who didn't have an actively pending habeas corpus lawsuit. So these are inches of progress when you put Lamberth's decision together with the opinion of Gladys Kessler, the federal judge who pointed a very sharp finger at President Obama and said he's the one who can stop the force feeding, he's the one who can release people and end the hopelessness of those who are held at our gulag in Cuba. We've been following the threats by Democrats in the Senate to blow up the filibuster rules, or to blow up part of them. And I have described Harry Reid as wimpy. And true to form, we're learning that his threat to make a change in the filibuster rules hinges on continued Republican obstruction of three judicial nominations and the nomination of Cordray to the Consumer Protection Board and the nomination of three people to the National Labor Relations Board. So this is the big test. Next week on Monday or Tuesday, Reid will try to bring those confirmations to the floor. He's saying that if the Republicans obstruct, that's when he will pull the trigger, put a vote to changing the rules, and with the narrow majority that the Democrats enjoy in the Senate, they should be able to pull that off. But once again, instead of taking a bold, strong position, Harry Reid is just so wimpy and is looking for ways to get out of changing the filibuster rules. I wanted to recap for you the investigation and some of the reports as if you're listening to this over the weekend. It was last Saturday about noontime that the Asiana Airlines Flight 214, a Boeing 777, crash-landed at San Francisco International Airport. And I want to credit the reporters at the San Francisco Chronicle and some of our local television stations. They've done a good job with this story. We've learned quite a bit. For example, the pilot at the controls was an experienced pilot but had never landed a 777 at San Francisco Airport. He was training, and his trainer was new to the job as a cockpit trainer. Then we learned that the trainee who was at the controls reported being blinded by a flash of light just seconds before the impact of the tail section with the breakwater that caused the plane to break up. Two people were killed. Hundreds were injured. And the response by San Francisco firefighters and medics was mixed. They're still investigating whether one of the fire trucks ran over the body of a teenage girl who died. She had been ejected from the rear of the aircraft and may have been already dead, but we don't know. And we have troubling reports that people who got out of the jet and were on the tarmac and injured had to use their cell phones to call 911 to get ambulances out there, and were told, we don't have enough ambulances. Now, I can understand there was a lot of confusion, and the firefighters were concentrating on putting out the flames and making sure that there were no people left trapped inside the airliner. And while I'm not trying to second-guess them, I just want you to know that these are difficult challenges to take on, and it wasn't a perfect episode. I also want to credit the National Transportation Safety Board, because they have been remarkably forthright and forthcoming in the very early stages of this investigation, when usually they just clam up and we wait months, if not years, to get information. I've been telling you about the ups and downs of the Public Utilities Commission here in California and their patsy regulatory approach to the super utility Pacific Gas and Electric, what I call our rogue utility. And you may know that a few years ago, a gas pipeline of PG&E's blew up in the community of San Bruno. 8 or 9 people were killed, homes were destroyed. And the discussion now at the Public Utilities Commission is what kind of penalties PG&E should face. And there was a group of lawyers inside the agency who wanted to really punish PG&E, but they were being restrained by their supervisors. And the dispute caused three attorneys to not quit the PUC, but they asked to be reassigned and taken off this case. That went public. And the issue was that the higher-ups were trying to fashion the penalties in such a way that PG&E would not pay a fine. They would simply agree to pay the costs of upgrading pipelines, identifying where their pipelines are located, because they, in many cases, don't know, and other issues related to public safety. And critically, the language omitted the term fine. They said that PG&E would pay a penalty by pumping $2 billion or more into upgrading and repair of pipelines. And because it's not called a fine, the penalty would create a $900 million tax deduction for PG&E. Now, that tax deduction would in some ways help ratepayers. So it's not just a black and white set of issues. But to its credit, the PUC has announced this week that they are withdrawing the plan that would not fine PG&E, and they're starting over. We can't start over on the Bay Bridge, a $6.5 billion mess attempting to repair, or actually replace, a segment of the bridging between Oakland and San Francisco. We discovered a few months ago that some of these huge bolts, they're like 30 feet long, cracked when they tightened the nuts on them. And they were improperly treated, these galvanized bolts. And it appeared that any attempt to fix the fix would take months and delay the opening of the bridge. And at a meeting this week, some engineers surfaced a plan that's more than a Band-Aid, but it would only take about 3 weeks to reinforce the areas where these faulty bolts are located. And the bottom line here is that we're now playing a guessing game. Is the new bridge, even with its defects, stronger and safer than the old bridge in an earthquake? Do you trust the bridge that was built 50 years ago more than the bridge with its faults that has been built in the last 5 years? These are very difficult choices for the traveling public and taxpayers in general to evaluate. And I have to say that our elected leaders and the people at Caltrans who are managing this project have not helped and left many of us wondering whether crossing that bridge will be safe in a major earthquake. Janet Napolitano is stepping down as the Cabinet Secretary for Homeland Security to take a job to run the University of California. And I'm a little surprised because it appeared that Napolitano and the Health and Human Services Secretary, Catherine Sebelius, would be the only holdovers in addition to Eric Holder for the second term. Now it's down to Holder and Sebelius as Napolitano moves on. I'm not a big fan of hers. I don't think she's an evil individual, but I hate the Department of Homeland Security starting with its name and the fusion centers that we have discussed on this program. And also, I can't forgive Obama for appointing Napolitano because she was the governor of Arizona. And when she left, we got the Dragon Lady. And finally, who's out to lunch more? Senator James Inhofe or Google? Google sponsored a fundraising lunch for the senator who denies climate change and other basic facts of science. And the company whose motto is "Don't be evil" is lurking with some of the darkest forces in Washington, D.C. as they play the big corporate game. I can't really tell you who's more out to lunch in this case. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.